This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiao Yi. Today is our public health series and we are looking at health allocations with Budget 2020 around the corner to be tabled next month, almost exactly a month's time. Today we'll be looking at what goes into health allocations in the federal budget. How are these allocations determined? What are the priorities? And, theoretically, how much will be considered enough for the country's health needs? And so we'll be hearing from three perspectives. As always, for the Public Health Show, of course, Azrul Mohamad Khalib, CEO for the Galen Center for Health and Social Policy. Also joining him, Dr. Kelvin Yee, MP for Bandar Kuching, and also member of the Parliamentary Budget Select Committee, and Dr. Lim Chee Han, an independent health policy researcher. Good afternoon, everyone. How are all of you?
Good afternoon.
Before I forget, our lines are open. If you have any questions or comments you'd like to share about the health budget, 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Azrul, you were very keen to discuss this in the lead up to budget the tabling of Budget 2020. Perhaps you'd like to shed some light on why you feel it's important to look at health allocations.
Well, thank you, Xiaoyi. You know, one of the things that is eagerly looked at is the budget allocations for large budget items. So one of the things that is highest on the priorities is health. Health is the third largest item on the federal budget for development, and therefore one of the things that eagerly looked at is what the question is, whether or not there'll be an increase for the coming year in terms of allocations to further develop the healthcare system. So Malaysia is a society that is going through monumental changes. There are more aging populations, there's more non-communicable diseases, there's communicable diseases, there's a lot of demand on the public health sector. So the question is whether it's enough today, the amount of allocation that we put in order for us to meet these really, really significant challenges, not only for this year or next year, but also for the next couple of years to come. So when we look at the way that the budget has been allocated, it goes hand in hand with the way Malaysian society has grown, the population has grown. When we first look back in early history, you see it being 2% of the federal budget. Today, this year's allocation is closer to 10% of the federal budget. And this is something that demonstrates the commitment of the government, regardless of which government that came in, that it is committed to the issue of health. So I think this is one issue that translates all the way back to the individual average Malaysian on the ground, whether she or he is waiting for outpatient treatment at a public hospital or getting specialized treatment for cancer in our world-class hospitals in this country.
Dr. Kelvin, what do you think? What value does it bring for the average Malaysian to understand or to know this process of, allocations being made for health services in the budget?
I think it's as Azrul has pointed out, healthcare is something that's very close to every single Malaysian because it affects every single Malaysian. In Malaysia, we have grown up to have a relatively free healthcare system. It's a more tax-based system where the government gives a huge, huge chunk into funding this whole system. So, of course, the big question will be the sustainability of such system with the ever-growing population, with the ever-growing diseases, and also improvements in terms of medical treatments, technology, and, of course, increasing costs. So that's why it's important for every Malaysian to understand the costing of these issues, because with every growth, there has to be the dollar and cents issue. Mm-hmm. So if every average Malaysians understand where the money comes from, how the money is being spent, then they will have a better grasp of what this whole healthcare financing is all about.
Dr. Lim, do you have any further thoughts to share on that sort of like the starting point before we get into the nuts and bolts of it?
Yeah. On budget, government has to set the priorities right about what proportion a share of budget have to put in on which items or which ministries. So The common saying is put money where the mouth is. So remember, the policy implementation has to be financially supported. So the budget planning and size of allocation often reflect the policy intent and commitment. So to me, factors to be considered when you reprioritizing the budgetary priorities. First, the urgency of an issue. Second, the risk management. Third, demand projection. And fourth, the government responsibility. We know that government, there's no one has to must be left behind because they can't afford healthcare. So government has a natural responsibility to take care of every member of societies, even the most vulnerable communities. So often people say health is wealth. So the government, if they believe in this, they have to really increase the budget so that to reduce people to fall sick, to reduce the loss of productivity due to illness. So the government has to invest enough.
Okay.
You know, Pakatan Harapan, I'm just going straight into it. Yeah. Pakatan Harapan, in its manifesto, promised to increase the spending up to 6% and of GDP. Oh, sorry, 4%? 4% of GDP. I'm just trying to get a little bit extra there.
This is a new promise.
Yeah. But
You can't make new manifestos, Andrew, no matter how much you want
I'm just trying here, man. But 4% of GDP. So today it's around 2.3. And that's not including the private sector spending, right? So a lot of talk has gone into it that Malaysia is underspending on health. The WHO recommends a lot more compared to upper middle income countries, others. And even now, when we're going into a high income country, we're arguably, supposedly not spending enough in terms of how we should be dealing with health problems, the challenges, but also in ensuring the sustainability of the health infrastructure as we have today. So the question that really comes into mind is it really about how much you put in or how you spend it? Or is it both? I mean, what are we talking about here in terms of the allocations? Where does it go? How do you spend the health budget?
Often we need to use the WHO Global Health Observatory data as the benchmark to compare with the countries who share the similar economic status, such as Thailand and South Africa. We can actually find that the share of a total health expenditure over GDP, we were only at 3.8 in 2016. Whereas South Africa, 8.1%. And the share of the health budget over government total budget, we were at 8.2%, South Africa, 13.3%, and Thailand, 15.3%. So on both occasions, we evidently fell short in the health expenditure. We should not actually jump into conclusion that we self-congratulate that we are more efficient in delivering health by using less resources, or we are simply healthier. This is not true. I beg to differ. So it should be the other way around. We did not spend enough on health budget. So why did the governments in South Africa and Thailand can spend more, but we could not?
Yeah, but we have universal healthcare in this country. Almost everyone in this population is within 5 kilometers of a healthcare facility. And yet we're spending less than what other people are trying to achieve, but have not been able to, for less. Isn't that a good thing? I mean, we're spending less and achieving the kind of results that we want.
I believe, of course, we need to spend more. I think that is a known fact. However, also I've also made to understand that how much more, that is always a subjective figure. Because even if we push up to what was recommended by WHO at 7%, the question again is, can we then achieve the same healthcare outcomes parameters that we have right now? But of course, those are guidelines. Those are targets that we want to set to have a more holistic and comprehensive healthcare. Actually, I believe that Malaysian healthcare is actually one of the top. It's probably the top in the world in terms of accessibility, in terms of even healthcare parameters like maternity, death, infant mortality. So to a certain extent, with the amount that we are spending now, we have achieved quite good parameters.
Exactly, yeah.
But the problem now, the question we need to ask further is, number one, is this system sustainable? And is it organic is it organic enough to sustain the changing society? That means aging society, the increase of NCDs. And if we are looking at 2030, which is probably 10 years from now, there is an estimate that there will be double of, for example, chronic kidney diseases or chronic kidney failures. And of course, the famous, what we call the silver tsunami, which is the aging society. I think at that time, they'll be predicting about 12.6-12.8% of our society being aging society. So are we ready for that? Is the current tax-based system that we are in able to adapt to that, change while still delivering the health parameters that we have?
And you've brought up that question, but are we actually looking at that question seriously? Are we having that conversation? Because it does feel like we've been asking it in a very rhetorical manner for quite a while now. And, you know, every time the budget is tabled, it feels like there are a lot of short-term allocations in there, but at what point do we need to, and is it being done, that stepping back and looking at those questions that you've just raised?
I think, of course, to be fair, this conversation has been ongoing, and I think the Ministry of Health has been looking at it seriously. However, there has to be an understanding that because we are so entrenched in the current system that we have, in order to change a healthcare policy or healthcare system, it may come as a huge shock to the whole system. And because if there is a sudden change, there may be sudden pain, sudden teething issues and stuff like that. So I think to a certain extent, there has to be a proper transition, how the conversation goes, how the public is also made aware if there is any shift of healthcare financing. Because at the current rate, most of the budget of the Ministry of Health goes into two main factors, as we know, expenditures and development. Mm-hmm. Currently, from the last budget, about 26 billion is going into expenditures, and this covers, of course, the operations costs and emoluments and everything. While development, we are looking at about 2.1, 2.2 billion. So while this is sufficient per se, but it's inadequate. Mm-hmm. That means it can keep the system.
That's a paradox, right there.
It can keep the system moving now, but it might not be adequate for any changes if it's needed.
Okay. We are talking about health allocations in the federal budget. Budget 2020 is due to be tabled in October. So we're looking at sort of the questions about what are the considerations when you're planning for the health allocations? And, you know, we've already jumped right into the most difficult question, I think, is, you know, if we need to increase it, how much? You know, what's going to be considered enough? In the studio with me, Azrul Mohamad Khalib, CEO of the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, Dr. Kelvin Yee, MP for Bandar Kuching and member of the Parliamentary Budget Select Committee, and Dr. Lim Chee Han, Independent Health Policy Researcher. We'll be right back after this quick break on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yi. Today is our public health series. We are looking at health allocations for the federal budget. How much is enough is the question we're asking, among several others. In the studio with me, Azrul Mohamad Khalib, CEO of Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, Dr. Kelvin Yee, MP for Bandar Kuching and member of the Parliamentary Budget Select Committee, and Dr. Lim Chee Han, Independent Health Policy Researcher. I'll be showing my ignorance a little bit, but how exactly do you start planning for the health allocations when you're looking at so going back to if we're talking about it's 8.2% or whatever of the entire government's budget, you know, that very first step of looking at we're talking about health today. You know, who's sitting in the room when we discuss this? What does the process look like?
I think most budgeting for all ministries will involve different stakeholders. I think the main thing that they need to first set up is, of course, the fixed expenditures, which is, for example, operation costs, emoluments, the salaries and everything. So with that fixed, that, of course, then you come to the development fund or other special allocations that will be recommended normally by the Jabatan Kesihatan Negeri. Yeah. So the Ministry of Health will have meetings with the multiple JKN to get recommendations as well as gaps they need to address in that budget. So based on the new Pakatan Harapan government principle, we are going at a zero-based budgeting system where we evaluate all the different expenditures and outcomes. It'll be interesting to see, especially this year, how that will come and how the recommendations of JKN or even measurements of healthcare outputs will influence all this budgeting. But of course, the main direction the budget is determined is by the national healthcare policies, philosophy or direction. Mm. So that's where the government will decide to put most of the money. At what kind of direction do they want to take the healthcare budget?
So just picking up on that point, which is an excellent point to remind listeners out there that this year's budget is supposed to be zero-based budgeting and be based on needs. Mm. And what you just described at the very beginning of your answer just now in terms of, you know, the expenditure, the fixed expenditure, really we're talking about at least 70% already.
Higher.
So what we're really talking about is not so much 100% of the budget. What we're really talking about really is like 20% or 30% or whatever's left over, right? So how do we justify this use of this new approach to actually cut down on wastage, to be able to use our funding much more effectively, and most importantly, to be able to afford some of the things that we say that we can't afford? I mean, let's not forget, you know, 2025, Malaysia is estimated to enter a high-income country status. So we're not that far away from supposedly spending on that same level. So how do we manage that? You know, how do we get to where the Minister of Finance wants us to go?
I think, of course, there has to be a transition period. To change a certain healthcare direction or policy will be too much a shock to a system. So there is a certain level of we have to follow the best based on the old system that we are inherited per se, but then have certain room for maneuver to try to shift it or maybe redirect towards a new direction. So of course, emoluments, in my view, is also important. We cannot say that operations and emoluments are not important. But what we can cut off, especially what you mentioned just now, is on wastage. I think that is the one thing that we are looking at to make sure there is best value for the money being spent. And of course, different parameters are being evaluated on this. Of course, all the healthcare parameters, healthcare outcomes, and of course, even auditing to make sure that the money is not being wasted. So all these are different parameters. While the 20-30% that we may have, we try our best in terms to maneuver the direction, but we cannot ignore the present system and the system that the public is already used to.
So speaking of that, a system that the public is used to, you used the word free just now at the, you know, about how our public health system is. And I sort of disagree on that term. And I want to just ask you, Jihan, you know, 2025... Malaysia hits the high income status. It certainly doesn't feel like we're high income. Everybody's going to dispute that.
Right.
But the way we're looking at health in this country seems more like welfare or charity rather than investment.
I think it needs to be based on needs.
Yeah. So don't you think that in terms of how we look at, you know, this 1 ringgit, 5 ringgit thing, right?
Yeah.
Because people seem to think the cost of healthcare is 1 ringgit, 5 ringgit. But it isn't, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
For that 1 ringgit or 5 ringgit, somebody else is paying the 200 or 150 ringgit costs in the salary of the doctor, the salary of the nurse, the ubat-ubatan, the drugs and so forth. So the public doesn't see that. They only see the 1 ringgit, 5 ringgit. And because of that, it's even taken for granted, right? So we're heading high income country status. YB has said that we need to change the way we think. What needs to change, do you think, especially when we talk about the health budget?
MOH often very proud to say they are very pro-poor. Oh. So, pro-poor.
Okay, pro-poor. Yeah. Pro-poor. Yeah. Okay.
So it's a very progressive, because if you go back to the tax revenue system, who are the taxpayers? The wealthier one. So they subsidize, cross-subsidize the health financing to the poor family. So in the way, actually it's kind of social welfare and justice. But I just wonder if the budget allocation, when the government setting the priorities, what portion, what share they determine to table in the parliament, don't they also consider about the demand projection? Because I see that it's about 70% of hospital admission and 75% of beds are actually in the public sector. And the growth rate actually is, if you look at the figures, it's scary. From 2008 to 2017, the growth rate for the hospital outpatients, 39%. Attendance to public health facilities, 86%, which is concerned about 1.5 million and 20 million more patients
That's
coming
huge.
To us.
That's
yeah.
huge.
So
huge.
More and more patients coming to knock on the doors, and you're not supposed to turn them away because Correct. It's their right. Yeah. So if you just follow the historic trend, as I see now for the past 10 years, I don't think it's sufficient to keep up with the demand. So I
agree.
Yeah. I really hope that the government will take into the consideration. I'm sure the planning division has all the numbers for the MOF to consider.
Yeah, but it still doesn't answer the question, I think. Because, yes, we know that. Is there a magic number that we're talking about here? What? Because there is what we want, what we need, what we can actually afford. And then there's a gap between these two things, right? So today we're going by what we can afford, I presume. And last year, the Pakatan Harapan government gave the largest increase in the health budget ever given in the history of this country, which shows it's very much committed to health. So it recognizes that it is important to invest in health. But how are we going to argue for the future in terms of this health budget? Should we expect another billion increase, 2 billion? Next year, should it be more? I mean, what are we talking about? Where should the money go?
I hold the government to be responsible for the promise made in the Pakatan Manifesto to increase to 4%. I think it's doable if they start planning right now to increase and reprioritize the budget. Of course, you can't get a lot of money just by cutting wages. You have to see what are the priorities
okay,
for the government.
So if the Pakatan Harapan were to, if you're going to hold YB here to the Pakatan Harapan promise, sorry, like YB, I'm just going to use this one. If the Pakatan Harapan government were to fulfill the promise of the 4% of GDP, how much money are we talking about? Today it's 29 billion. How much more would the government need to allocate in order to fulfill that promise?
By 2023, if they want to reach the 4% GDP for the health budget, it will translate to 79 billion.
Wow. This 79
take,
billion.
Yeah, wow. This will take about
there you
20,
go.
10%. But the education budget already is the largest item in the whole federal budget.
60 billion for education.
But you can look at the changing of the demographics in Malaysia. We have falling birth rates. That means less and less, fewer and fewer students enroll in the schools. But you know that there are more and more people, especially because we are now in the aging population. Aging population, senior citizens need more health attention, healthcare attention. So just by looking at this changing of demographics, you would know that we should allocate more for the health budget instead of other. I don't advocate really cutting from the education budget, but there are ways that you can maneuver to see which are your priorities.
What do you think, Dr. Kelvin? Because if somebody is to get more, somebody will get less.
I think that is why the zero-based budgeting is very important. I think it's zero-based. It's not just isolated every ministry, but it has to be a big picture. So if a certain ministry, for example, at this period of time, may not need a certain amount of money, because there is never a magic number, and budgeting is always the most difficult thing. There's never enough for budget. So I guess as mentioned by my colleague just now, if in his view that education, there will be a general decrease due to the low birth rates and due to aging society, then this zero-based budgeting should be able to capture this data. Then money will be allocated proportionally to the needy areas. Of course, I still believe that we should target that 4% GDP for healthcare. I still believe that we have that maneuvering room before the conversation for another healthcare financing system or healthcare system in Malaysia. But with that saying, we should not rest on our laurels and just sweep it under the carpet. I believe that the public needs to be educated. The public needs to know the conversation of healthcare financing. I think one of the big mistakes of the previous administration when it comes to health financing, when they brought up the whole issue of one care. I was against it at that period of time.
So was I.
I was against it. And I still maintain that stand to a certain extent. But one of the biggest mistakes that they made at that time was the communication with the public. I think the public wasn't ready yet. As I said, the public is already so used to this universal healthcare system. But then the conversation was too drastic. at that period of time. So as we progress towards that conversation, as we push towards 4% of the GDP, that conversation has to start now. And not only conversation start now, we must start upgrading the facilities and the quality of our public healthcare facilities, hospitals, clinics, clinic communities and everything. This have to be upgraded to be on par or at least similar towards the private sector. Only then the public will be a bit more accepting for a change of a healthcare financing system.
You know, Dr. Lim, when every year when the budget is tabled, right after that, you will hear different groups saying, this part was left out. You know, for budget 2019, mental health, I think, was a huge gap there. And then you will have special interest groups here and there who was hoping for something from the pot, and you know, they will be disappointed when their promises are not fulfilled or their demands. How should these kinds of demands play into the discussion for allocations? You can't please everybody, and everybody wants something very specific as well. How do you take that all into consideration but also have a fair budget?
I think government has to take a long view into the long-term development of the health facilities. For example, I would say that the developmental budgets, the shortfall is quite telling, because 3 years ago, there's a fire broke out in the Johor Hospital. Bahru. It's because of the maintenance issue and upgrading of the facilities was not there. And then only this year, April, a doctor from Sabah actually went out in the social media complaining about the depleted, underfunded Sabah rural health clinics.
It's my friend.
So I think if the government really wants to increase the capacity to accommodate more patients or redistribute them by building more urban hospitals according to need, or upgrading or fully utilize the current district non-specialist hospitals, I think the government has to plan now. Because for development budget, it's not for 1 year the hospital can be built. It is spread across 5 years or more.
Does that mean, I'm sorry to harp on this point, but do you think that the government just should not be looking at small items, certain diseases perhaps? It's a very narrow, some of the items on the budget have a very narrow focus as opposed to broadly looking at facilities, infrastructure, and then here and there you have small pockets of very, very narrow focus. Do you think that perhaps there's a disparity in the way those funds are allocated?
The public perception is only that whether the government can deliver or not on the point of need. When the person falls sick, he can't wait forever for government to give the budget, allocate the budget for them to have the drugs. So they have to find a ways to get themselves treated. So on that count, government has to be prepared for those demands so that they can allocate enough resources to take care of those in need. That is the main point, that no one's left behind.
But let me talk about I'll go to one specific disease burden, cancer. It's one of the biggest challenges that is facing any society, and especially in Malaysia, we have a very large number of people who are developing cancer. Majority of these cases are coming in at late stage, third and fourth stage. And many of the patients, survivors, are all saying there's a treatment gap in terms of how the services are being delivered through the public healthcare facility. Basically, when it comes to third and fourth stage, the government system can't handle it because there's not enough of the necessary treatment and drugs, especially the innovative, the immunotherapies, the targeted therapies are available. They just can't afford it through the health system. So there is a problem here. And the Cancer Care Working Group has published even a paper putting a series of recommendations to improve upon that. And one of it is to increase the allocations that are being provided for cancer. And it needs to be looked at as a form of investment. But the issue here really is that when we look at budgets, we don't see investment. We see expenditure, cost, right? We see
curative.
It's curative. So it's but less of the preventive approach, right? So how then can we change the approach we look towards budget on health? Because at the end of the day, we're investing in something that you cannot necessarily foresee. So when you look at our budget, most of the expenditure is going to the curative expenditure rather than the preventive. We don't do promotive health. We do very little preventive health. So should you be recommending more money to be invested there?
Actually, I'm part of the Parliamentary Select Committee for Budget. And one of our roles is to recommend budget allocations to different, I mean, not just healthcare, but ministries or across the board. So in my recommendation for this year's budget, of course, I focus a lot on healthcare. And one of my main proposal was the shifting of prioritization of treatment to focus more on preventive care, because I feel that healthcare should be more proactive rather than fighting fires. So you see, the tragedy, and it's not just Malaysia. I think the reality globally is that we are still funding illness rather than promoting health itself. I mean, I'm talking about prevention and prophylaxis. Mm. And of course, you mentioned cancer. And cancer actually, and that same group actually quoted a study which is very, very good. It's a US-based study that revealed that by diagnosing cancer early, and treating when it is early, you can save the country up to US$26 billion a year. So that is a huge saving. However, in order to reach there, we cannot still ignore the treatment.
Exactly. You can't leave people behind.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. Correct. So there has to be a balance in terms of curative. I still believe that majority of the budget still have to go to curative.
Yeah.
But then we have to somehow shift a certain philosophy to have more investment into preventive public health and also detection of NCDs. So in my view, the Pakatan Harapan government has introduced Pekar B40.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It has its
excellent program for that one, NCDs, mm-hmm. right?
Yep. It has its flaws, don't get me wrong. It has its flaws, but the philosophy behind it is good in the sense that we want to have a medical screening to detect diseases early and try to nip it by the butt. So recently, the health minister has announced that they are decreasing the age from it was 50.
Yeah.
And this is something I pushed for, because I said that if we want to tackle NCDs, we got to screen people young, not when they're 50s, because then you detect 90% everybody having NCDs. Mm. So they have reduced to 40. So this itself is a good way forward. So once we detect early, we can treat early. I think that's important.
Okay, we are discussing health allocations for the federal budget on our public health show today. In the studio with me, Azrul Muhammad Khalib, CEO of Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, Dr. Kelvin Yee, MP of Bandar Kuching and member of the Parliamentary Budget Select Committee, and Dr. Lim Chee Han, independent health policy researcher. When we come back, we'll just pick up a little bit more on this conversation, especially perhaps it would be very, very specific to you and your constituency as well, Dr. Kelvin, the decentralization of healthcare. And so following on from that, disbursement or allocation of funds for Sabah and Sarawak. So stay tuned to that right here on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to The Health Show. I'm T. Xiao Yik. It's our public health series today. So in the studio, as always, Azrul Muhammad Khalib, CEO of Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy. And joining him today are Dr. Kelvin Yee, MP for Bandar Kuching, and also member of the Parliamentary Select Committee on the Budget, and Dr. Lim Chee Han, independent health policy researcher. We're discussing health allocations in the budget that's due to be tabled in October. Before the break, Dr. Kelvin, I mentioned that I was going to pivot over to you to look at Pakatan Harapan's one of their promises in the manifesto, which was to decentralize healthcare. And part of that conversation of decentralization would be the allocation of healthcare resources. Ideally, if we want to provide more autonomy to Sabah and Sarawak in terms of healthcare decision making, how should healthcare funds be allocated? And give some context, if you could, how are they being allocated now?
Currently, of course, healthcare is a federal matter. And most decisions in terms of policy changes or funding is made in Putrajaya here. And then it will be allocated to Sabah and Sarawak. I think the
State Health Department.
Through the State Health Department, correct. Mm-hmm. So I think the understanding behind that manifesto was that a lot of decisions that applied to certain states in Semenanjung, especially healthcare decisions or healthcare policies, may not be very applicable to Sabah and Sarawak. I think one of the major example I could give is, for example, there is an understanding that every state should have a tertiary hospital. So we have one tertiary hospital in Sarawak, in Kuching. However, the size of Sarawak is the size of Semenanjung itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So people up north, Limbang and Lawas and even Miri, for them to get certain specialized treatment, for example, cardiac treatment or even cancer, they have to travel all the way down to Kuching for that treatment. So certain decisions that are made in Putrajaya may make sense here in Semenanjung, but may not make very good sense here in Sabah and Sarawak. So that was the reason why we believe to a certain level of decentralization of powers so that decisions could be made in Putrajaya, in Kuching, for Sarawak and of course in Sabah itself. How to fund that will be an interesting question. Mm. That's where, again, I believe it has to be need-based. I don't believe in a full centralization because I believe we still need a certain consistency in our healthcare policy for one country. However, another matter that we need to look at for decentralization is not just powers, but the decentralization of hospitals. Because currently, a lot of the public, I think their main consideration, if they are sick, the first thing they go to is a hospital. Rather, to the tertiary hospital.
Yeah.
Not the primary care yeah. not the clinic kesehatans or what we have now. I mean, there used to be a One Malaysia clinic, which we are converting to clinic communities. So in my view, we have to decentralize more. There has to be a better integration or better understanding of the three tiers of healthcare system in our country to act as a front gate, like a guardhouse. So that there is not too much congestion in the tertiary hospitals mm-hmm. that may affect and compromise the quality of healthcare provided in the tertiary hospitals.
And, you know, this is an excellent point because one of the problems of congestion in our hospitals is because people feel that why bother going to primary care? Why don't go straight to the hospital where we can get the best possible treatment and care? Because that's where they believe all the doctors are.
The specialists are.
Whereas if you were to go from primary, then you're going slowly upwards and then you go tertiary, then you go straight to the hospital, right? But let me ask you on this issue, right, about allocation of resources. Because of some of the issues you raised, don't you think perhaps there could be a future where the state government could also co-fund the health budget? You know, where you have from the resources of the state also match ringgit for ringgit, for example, and make it a lot more allocations available for health, but also ownership of the state government on where those resources are going to be spent, but also determining exactly what the needs are in terms of those things rather than depend on Putrajaya. I mean, do you think there could be a future for Sabah Sarawak to do this?
Of course, if you live in an ideal world,
sure,
that would be the best case scenario. However, there are a lot of political considerations to it, as well as even the capacity of the states, whether they are capable of funding that. So Sarawak has a healthy reserve. Again, it is a reserve, but how sustainable if you're talking about funding on the long term? Sabah may not have a healthy reserve in comparison to Sarawak. So again, it comes to the capacity, whether the states are willing to be part of it. So ideally, yes, there has to be a sense of ownership by the state governments. But politically, considerations may be a bit difficult on that matter.
A bit difficult.
Interesting. I'm being optimistic.
Yes. We have a comment here on WhatsApp. Why not tap into the insurance industry, which is cash rich, to help elevate the strain on government funding in public healthcare? And that's a point that I'd like to link to the My Salam scheme that was announced at last year's, for budget 2019 and launched beginning of this year, which is, working with a private insurance provider in Malaysia. What are your thoughts on, so this is talking about bring different ways of bringing in money into the system.
Well, my own opinion on My Salam is that this is one of the early attempts of a public-private partnerships, innovative approach, and it managed to secure 2 billion ringgit, which is supposed to cover a period of 5 years. Now, 2 billion to the average person, you and I, I'm sure Kelvin, Dr. Kelvin there, Dr. Limo, 2 billion is a lot
it's
of money.
Lot. Mm.
Shout it, 2 billion, you know?
Mm. You feel like you could do a lot?
You feel like you can do a lot, but when you look it against the health budget, 2 billion is not even 10% of this year's
which allocation. Which was 29, you know? Almost 29 billion.
And this is supposed to cover the whole 5 years of that period of... So we need to look beyond some of these approaches. But one of the ways that the government can actually do better, I think, is to continue to explore some of these public-private partnerships and to not be afraid to fail. Because there's going to be a lot of failures along the way.
Definitely.
And it needs to just learn from that and to be able to improve, continuously improve, but also to take criticism and to be able to consult stakeholders. Because when we talk about the health budget, right, we need to consult as many people as possible to get those needs understood so that it can then allocate appropriately. But let me just ask you, about Dr. Kelvin, consultation, how important is it when we're talking about this year's budget, next year's budget? Is it happening? Will it be part of the process permanently, or is this, you know?
I believe in principle, the new budgeting system encourages, if not compels, more consultation with stakeholders. I think itself, for example, IDEAS today released a statement how the Ministry of Finance have consulted them in terms of the reforms or fiscal reforms that is needed in the budgeting system itself. So in principle and the philosophy that we hold on to, it is very, very important. I believe MOH has consulted with multiple stakeholders, including the private sector.
Just last week, actually.
Exactly.
I think,
yeah. Sector. Because I think there, as you rightly point out, there is no one answer for healthcare financing. And I think there is a lot of experimenting because every context is different. My salam, in my view, is to a certain extent is historical because it has never really been done in our country, and I'm not so sure about other countries. But itself, it is a example of how PPPs, public-private partnerships, could play an important role in healthcare because I believe in a healthcare ecosystem. And healthcare ecosystems will require different stakeholders, the private, the public, and even the third force, to be part of it. So this, in my view, there's so much to be improved about My Salam, but My Salam itself has to be more made known to the public. I can give you figures.
So it's communication again, right?
I can give you figures. For example, there was a mid-year review for the budget. And then being part of the Parliamentary Select Committee, we were made aware of... performance of the different budgets or different ministries. And one of the things I questioned a lot was My Salam, because until June, there were only about 1,807 claims. So as you mentioned, 2 billion was allocated for 5 years. That comes out to about 400 million a year. But in June, there was only 127,000 ringgit claims.
Ringgit?
127,900. Oh. That means it's far from the targeted.
So, although to be fair, that number has actually increased now.
Of course.
I think it's like 1.3 million as of today, I think.
Okay.
The last communication from it, because the 8,000 ringgit they're paying to people who qualify. But the amount is still low.
So, from 400 million.
400 million,
a year.
Right. Yeah.
So in the sense that the public are still not tapping in, and it's not their fault, because majority of them, not just the public, even the healthcare providers, are not fully aware of such scheme. Mm-hmm. So that is why it's an experiment. And every new initiative always have a transition period of getting known, of getting familiar, people being familiarized with the thing. So I do see it as a game changer. I do welcome more PPPs. And as we move on, there has to be some tweaks to kind of solidify this cooperation and how we should move forward.
Dr. Lim, any quick thoughts on My Salam?
Well, I'm sorry. Well, I think besides the low uptake probably is caused by the, I don't know how many claims actually not qualified or turned away because they are not qualified, because it has to be in the
BSH.
Besides that, it's 96 or 36,
36 critical illness.
How many incidents of a critical illness in the country, and actually they are qualified and they don't get the benefit, or they are not aware of the benefits. So this is one big issue.
Okay.
I can recognize it's something very innovative that the government comes up with this PPP project in the My Salam.
I just want to quickly read a comment from Jerry on WhatsApp. The well, I presume he means health allocations in the budget should be focused on prevention, for instance, spending on education about nutrition, healthy lifestyle, and all of that will be better investment. Spot on, Jerry. We are running out of time, but, you know, I'd still like to get some final thoughts from each of you about, and you have spoken about it, of course, what are the kinds of priorities and considerations when making putting down those allocations on paper, right? But let's presume all the talk has been done for Budget 2020. We're only a month away. I don't think they're still accepting suggestions, although maybe we can try through Dr. Kelvin.
Apparently, even to the last.
Yeah, there is.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
The budget speech is not. It's only on the last day.
To me, that's a little bit scary because...
you should hear last year's story.
But what would your wish list be for the coming budget, Dr. Kelvin?
Of course, I mean, from the first recommendation, I'm talking about preventive. I think that has to be a shift towards that. I think number two would be, of course, more investment into primary care. And as mentioned just now, we are turning all the clinic, Satu Malaysia, into a clinic community. And I believe this is a good direction. But then it shouldn't be just a good concept, or shouldn't just be a building or a shop lot in itself. But we must equip them with proper manpower, including MOs and pharmacists, so that pharmacists could give the right drug counselling and adequate supply of drugs, not just the C-list items. So that's one. And of course, number two is more allocations to the rural hospitals. And I'm looking at Sabah and Sarawak, of course. Because if we talk about equitable healthcare, it is to make sure that everybody, regardless of socioeconomic backgrounds or even demographic, they have quality access. There is access to quality healthcare. Just now, Mr. Azrul mentioned that in Malaysia, majority of them within 5 kilometers. Actually, in Sarawak, about 46.5% are more than nine kilometers. Mm. So that itself has to be addressed. So, of course, that is my Christmas wish list.
Okay, my wish is for the government to increase the budget towards the direction of 4% GDP and use the additional fund to upgrade the hospital facilities, build the EMR IT system as outlined by the health minister, and increase the provision to Bekaa B40 program because it's a good program. And that program should enlarge to cover more the entire B40 population. Right now, it's just a pilot project, and provide funding to where it's more in need. Of course, also need to train and retain more specialists to provide care.
If I want to add, I missed that one, something that is very close to my heart. I think there has to be proper and adequate allocation to mental health. I think this is an important view that we need to look in, especially with the changing demographic that we have with Industrial Revolution 4.0, with digitalization, with different changing society. Mental health will be an important factor to look in if we want to look at productivity.
Azrul?
For myself, I've three areas which I feel that people are being left behind in Malaysian healthcare. And one is late-stage treatment of cancer. I think a lot of people, especially women, are not having enough in meeting their treatment needs. So I think we could do better in that. Another area is rare diseases. I think this is one area that when we talk about orphan treatments, orphan drugs, this is one area that is considered the last of the last. And I think we should be able to do better as an upper middle income country. And the third final one, which was highlighted dramatically this year, is concerning orang asli health. And this is also rural health, which... hopefully, we will be able to improve upon, because even though we could say that Peninsular Malaysia is 5 kilometres away from a medical facility, but the reality is very different for people in the rural health areas where it could take days, you know, and a lot of costs in order to get to those healthcare facilities. So that's three areas that we're looking at.
Okay, thank you very much. That was Azrul Mohamad Khalib, CEO for Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, Dr. Kelvin Yee, MP for Bandar Kuching and member of the Parliamentary Budget Select Committee, and Dr. Lim Chee Han, Independent Health Policy Researcher. Thanks so much for joining me. You've been listening to Health and Living on a Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.